This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic will be the resignation of the Pope.
This Valentine's Day, KBOO presents the Alfred Hitchcock movie, Rear Window, plus a pre-show performance by Portland's favorite late-night talk show host, Contessa de la Luna. That's Valentine's Day starting at 7 p.m. for Contessa de la Luna live on stage, followed by the film Rear Window. Doors open at 6:30 at the Clinton Street Theater, 26th and Southeast Clinton in Portland. Tickets are available now at Brown Paper Tickets. Seating is limited. 100% of ticket sales go to KBOO for this benefit spectacular. See events under the KBOO website for February 14th, Valentine's Day. See you there.
Tune in Tuesday, February 13th at 9 a.m. to Alternative Radio. We'll listen to a lecture by Amiri Baraka titled Real Politics, Real Poetry. Amiri Baraka rose to fame in the 1960s as Leroy Jones. His 1964 off-Broadway play, Dutchman, created a sensation. Later, he became Amiri Baraka and was a central figure in the Black Arts Movement. He is an award-winning playwright and poet and recipient of American Book Award for Lifetime Achievement. He is a member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters. He is the author of many books, including Home and Digging. That's this Tuesday at 9 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
Dominus vobiscum, et cum spiritu tuo,
Good morning.
That's a great jumpy tune, isn't it?
Isn't it, though?
Hey,
that
this
hustles
is...
you right out of church.
Oh, I really like liturgical music. This is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
That's correct.
That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187. What are we doing?
We got a rather ambitious show today.
Ambitious?
Yeah. I want to start rather specifically and then broaden it out a little bit. A lot bit.
Okay.
Okay, if you didn't hear, Pope Benedict the... Which Benedict is he?
I don't know. What
16th, the latest in a long line of Benedicts.
He quit.
First time that's happened in nearly 600 years.
Well, you know, they used to have fights. There was a Pope Joan.
There's a Pope Joan?
So the mythology of the Catholic...
I see.
Thing is, and she allegedly, the proof of her femaleness was that she had a birth during a mass, allegedly. We don't know if this is true.
Proof of her femaleness.
I guess.
Well, what's remarkable about this is the papacy is an office occupied by the very ambitious. Most men who aspire to the papacy don't attain it until late in their lives. Pope Benedict was in his 80s. And generally, they serve until they die. Like I said, the last time somebody resigned was almost 600 years ago, and that was during a very turbulent period in the church's history when the papacy moved to France, and the Italians were really angry. You remember all this, right?
I remember all this.
Yeah, you were alive back then.
No,
right?
I went to Avignon and saw the Pope's house, Pope's castle.
That's right. On the bridge.
Sur le pont d'Avignon.
That was Pope Gregory back in 1415. He resigned in the midst of this schism. In the church, and he did so in the belief that that his resignation would pave the way for a grand reconciliation in the church. Didn't happen right away, but he had apparently good intentions. Let's give that long-dead Pope the benefit of the doubt, shall
Yay,
we?
Yay, good
right.
Pope.
So Benedict resigned. That generally doesn't happen. If you're ambitious enough to get this office, you serve until you're dead. So this is rather unusual. And I think it's a good opportunity for us to talk about the Catholic Church, the social force that it continues to be in the world. And when we broaden this conversation, I'd like to talk about patriarchal religions in general and whether they really have a relevant role to play here in the 21st century.
Well, they have a relevant role to play. Yeah. Whether that role is positive or negative is more to the point.
Indeed. Yeah, you're right. It's going to be relevant.
I mean, it's relevant. It's relevant, you know. You know, only priests can say Mass and can hear your confession and can forgive you with
right,
a few prayers.
Forgive you for being a human being.
For being bad.
Right.
Bad. Let's be clear about this, being bad.
So the Pope resigned. I still can't get over that. That's just
I don't know.
So,
I mean, do you have some kind of Catholicism in your background?
I do. I went to a year of Catholic school when I was very young.
Ah.
Then we moved, and I didn't go to Catholic school anymore. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not a Christian of any kind. I don't practice a religion of any kind.
You never went to Mass?
I went to Mass.
Yeah.
I've gone to a few more. I mean, a lot. One side of my family is almost exclusively Catholic.
Oh.
So I've been to various
events,
you know, funerals and christenings and
Catholic events
and that sort of thing.
Well, I've been to Catholic funerals.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know.
And I want to say right out front that I'm going to talk very broadly about the Catholic Church, and my judgment on the Church as an institution is largely negative, as you're going to hear in a few minutes.
Oh, my goodness. And we're going to get all the people out there who are Catholic.
That's why I'm issuing this disclaimer before we begin.
A disclaimer?
Yes.
Nothing that we are going to say during this hour has anything to do with KBOO. In fact, KBOO loves the popes.
Yes. Yes, we love the popes.
Popes.
Here at KBOO. The Catholic, what is the Catholic Church? That's a question I think we have to ask right up front.
We have to?
I think the, yes, we do. Okay. I think the first answer is the Catholic Church is its congregants, is its worshipers. And only secondarily, the Catholic Church is the ancient hierarchy of old men in dresses that administer the church all over the world.
Dresses.
First and foremost, the Catholic Church.
Men in drag
church,
is what you're
right.
saying.
First and foremost, the church is Catholics. The church is the worshipers who participate. And by and large, I don't have much bad to say about Catholics. The church.
About Catholics?
Right. The church and
well,
its
I'm glad of that. It'd be like saying something bad about right. Muslims or Jews or
right. The church and its
Protestants
worshipers do a whole lot of good over the world. There's no denying the massive humanitarian efforts that they contribute to every year. And they do a lot of very good things.
Well, they do bad things.
They do bad things. And we're going to talk about some of those right
well,
now.
Well, let's talk about, we could start with Pope Pius XII. He was the one during World War II.
Well, tell us about Pope Pius XII.
Well, I don't know. I'm no expert. First of all, more serious disclaimer. I am not an expert on church history, modern or traditional. I do know very few things. I know Pius XII was accused of using the resources of the Vatican, which included excellent engravers, mm-hmm. to forge documents in the first case to bring a number of important Jewish people after their congregations and so on had been disappeared by the Nazis to Rome to escape. And then in the second instance, toward the end of World War II, 44 specifically, a huge number, allegedly, a huge number of Nazis were given forged documents that got them to Latin America, particularly to Argentina.
Interesting.
That's alleged. I don't, you know, I wasn't there.
Allegedly. The
allegedly,
Pope was complicit in
allegedly.
Collaborating with the Nazis.
Yeah, allegedly. Ah. And you know, interestingly enough, you had various popes. I mentioned Pope Joan, but I don't know what the truth of that is. And of course, we do have on TV regularly with sex and religion and war, what could be better, the Holy Trinity, sex, religion, and war, we have history of the... Of the Spanish Pope.
Borgia.
The Borgias.
Yeah. There were a few Spanish popes in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly.
Well, Spain was, among all the nations of Europe, allowed to conduct the Inquisition in its territory pretty much unsupervised directly by Rome. And it was known throughout up until fairly modern times as the king and queen were their most Catholic majesties.
Their most Catholic majesties.
They were the
indeed.
Uniquely Catholic majesties.
Their most Catholic.
Mostly Catholic.
And the Spanish
because they had sex, I don't know.
The Spanish popes rose to power after the establishment of Spain's New World Empire when Spain Spain became, by a pretty wide margin, the wealthiest and most powerful nation.
Yeah, they squandered that.
They did. But that's another story for another time.
Another time, indeed.
Pope Benedict XVI, who just resigned, Joseph Ratzinger is what he used to be known as.
Well, unfortunately, the name is in English. It doesn't work.
Yeah, anyway. I've heard him. When he first took the job, I heard him.
It's not a job. It's a calling.
Papa Ratzi. Isn't that great? All right.
Not bad.
Anyway,
oh, this is going to be so awful.
No, it's not going to be so awful. It's important that we talk about this, and it's important that we segue to the broader conversation we're going to have when we're done talking about the Pope and the Catholic Church. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
All right, let's go.
I'll stand by your mannishness.
I do appreciate that.
Okay.
One of the biggest scandals, of course, to plague the Catholic Church in modern times is the revelation about something that was only talked about in whispers or joked about for a long, long time, and that is that priests, some of them, tend to have a thing for little boys.
Well, you know, I had when I was in the sociology department at Portland State, one of the faculty, I don't want to name her, who actually is of Caribbean heritage,
mm-hmm.
Remarked that everybody knew in her world that you never left children, boys or girls, alone, unsupervised, with a priest. She said that. So it's like folk wisdom.
Right. Am I saying that every Catholic priest is a pedophile?
No!
I'm not saying that. I am not saying that.
And I had a good friend who was a Catholic priest here in Portland, Father Healy, who I have a lot of respect for. I want to be clear on this. You know,
I want to be clear on this, too.
Okay.
But when we talk about these things, we're not indicting every priest. We're not indicting every Catholic.
Yeah.
But there are some crimes against up to thousands of people now.
More than thousands,
that need
I
to
suspect.
Be answered for, and that haven't been answered for, largely due to the actions of Pope Benedict XVI.
Well, and there's other stuff, too. I mean, in Ireland, the laundries were kind of a franchise given to three orders of nuns. And when a young woman showed a propensity to be sexually active, got raped or molested, or had any bad behavior or what was deemed bad behavior in the context of a very conservative Catholic-dominated environment, she would be sent forever to work in the laundries for nothing.
Yeah,
this is real.
Right, for daring to possess a sexuality.
Well, and
right.
many of them died relatively young because working in a laundry with chemicals, you know, kills you.
Right. All right. So Pope Benedict XVI, back when he was known as Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, his job at the time, or for part of that time, was that he led an organization within the church called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Wait a minute.
Most people know this by its more common name, the Inquisition.
Yes, the Inquisition.
The Inquisition.
Oh, not the Spanish Inquisition.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. While he was the leader of the Inquisition,
yes,
he helped shield a number of priests and even higher-ranking members of the church from the legal consequences of raping little boys.
Do we know this?
We know this to be true.
Okay.
I could give you specific examples, but that's going to take up too much of our time.
No, don't do that.
This is all out there. You can read it. It doesn't take very long to find it. And he was not alone in this. There were pedophiles throughout the hierarchy of the church all over the world who first systematically abused young children and then were shielded from the consequences of their actions by the hierarchy of the church. And it's important to note at this point that when I talk about the hierarchy of the church, I am talking exclusively about men. Men who, under the terms of their oath to the church, their symbolic marriage to Christ, are not allowed to have sex, and who generally go out into the world discouraging other people from having sex, except in the sanctified confines of the marriage bed. And if you have it at any other time, and especially if you're a woman, you make the baby Jesus cry. This is a tragedy. This is an abomination. And I'm wondering,
what, making
Catholics,
the baby Jesus cry?
No, no.
Oh.
Protecting pedophiles from the consequences of their actions. Now, progressive Catholics, liberal Catholics, I want to hear how you feel about church as a relevant force in your life still? Can you still, in good conscience, call yourself a Catholic in light of these horrible crimes?
I want to point out some good Catholic stuff.
All right. Point out some good Catholic stuff
in my own life experience. I'm not an expert. I do not have a strong background in theological history or the history of the church. Here's what I remember. I remember the Catholic worker movement, Dorothy Day, Ammon Hennessy. These were pacifists. The only thing that distinguished them from other pacifists was that they were Catholic and joined the church for celebration of Mass and apparently obeyed the Catholic rules on contraception and so forth and so on, though we never had that conversation. But they were brave. They were very active. They supported the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They supported SNCC. They were active progressives. And the next little example is the Liberation Theology Catholic priests and nuns, active particularly in Latin America, who died martyrs for the cause of freedom throughout Latin America.
Yes, and there's no denying any of that.
Well, I just want to be clear here.
But it has to also be said, despite the hope for the church and its progressive leanings that came out of the Second Vatican Council, there has been ground lost in that movement since Benedict's predecessor, John Paul, took the throne. And let's make no mistake, it is a throne. It's an actual throne of St. Peter.
But you get to wear gaudy stuff.
You get to wear gaudy stuff, yes. Yes, you, the servant of a guy who took a vow of poverty.
You got a high
get to
hat,
wear cloth
mitre,
of gold
mitre. You got
and diamond-encrusted shoes. But that I could go on and on.
Diamonds on the soles of the shoes?
And all over the shoes.
I see. I just want to check out.
So I'm really interested to hear from progressive Catholics about their connection to the church, whether you still consider yourself to be a Catholic, whether you think the institution can be redeemed, whether this is an indelible stain.
Well, whether the institution needs to be redeemed. I mean, let's be more neutral
yes,
here.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, after all.
And let's put out this question, too. Catholics, progressive listeners, Catholic listeners.
Anti-Catholics, whoever.
Right. We don't know yet who the next pope will be. But considering the fact that the College of Cardinals, who will choose the next pope, all of them were appointed by either Benedict XVI or his predecessor John
true?
Paul. It's true.
Ooh.
Both of whom are very, very conservative popes. So the odds that we're going to get a forward-looking, more liberal pope are very slim. Now, it's possible that for the first time we might have a non-European pope. But one thing I can say with 100% certainty is that the next pope will be a man, just like every other Catholic priest in the world, because you, women, female Catholics, you are not qualified to be a priest. You are not qualified to minister over a flock because you got the wrong plumbing.
Vicar of Christ. Well, I mean, this is very harsh, you know. You're being very harsh.
It's really frustrating to me. Covering up pedophilia systematically, thousands of cases, that's a crime against humanity.
Yes.
It is.
The Irish Church, in fact, used to, the priests on their own, this was not, I don't think, doctrine directly, said that if people who were married were sexually active for the pleasure that's in it, that was a sin itself.
You had
to go to confession for that. The only reason to be sexually intimate with a woman was to have a child.
Right. And there's no other reason for any other kind of sexual intimacy. Masturbation is a sin. Homosexuality is a sin. The outgoing Pope Benedict, by the way, is on record as talking about the intrinsic evil of homosexuality.
Oh, okay.
Now, before we open the phones, I want to read one thing here. Salon.com, a great place to go and read about all kinds of stuff, asked its progressive Catholic readers what their hopes were with this transition in the papacy.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman wrote in something I thought very articulate, rather profound. This is what she writes. While I think of my Catholic heritage as part of who I am, the papacy of Benedict XVI sealed my departure from the church that I once loved. My conscience, my reason, and my own experience of God's love have ultimately led me to believe that the hierarchy of the Catholic Church is far more concerned with the perpetuation of conservative Catholic dogma than it is to the propagation of a faith based on the radical inclusivity and boundless love of Jesus Christ. I think that's it in a nutshell.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's nothing in the official New Testament that talks about popes or the organization of the church in the terms of the Catholic Church today. There was early splits of various sorts. There are Eastern Orthodox churches as well as the Roman Catholic Church. And a Catholic means universal.
Right.
And in addition, the function, the economic and political function of the nuns, the nunneries, had often a great deal to do with, first of all, what are you going to do with unmarried, this is unsuccessful, unmarried women from the upper classes? Where are you going to stash them? You had to put them in a safe place, hence nunneries. And, no, this is really...
Get thee to a nunnery.
Yeah, get thee to a nunnery, exactly. And there was, in addition to that, several very, very successful, creative women who functioned out of nunneries. So it's a little bit, it's complicated.
Yes, it is complicated. And unless you feel tempted to call up and say, why should we care, Abe, what happens to some old
1
man
billion.
In class? 1.2 billion.
Whoa.
1.2 billion Catholics in the world.
And presumably growing.
And presumably growing, right? Because contraception is still out of bounds.
Well, you can't even use it to prevent AIDS.
No. Is there a more, I ask you right now, the Pope is a bona fide world leader. Maybe not quite on the level of heads of state, although he is technically a head of state. He is a bona fide world leader. He has that stature.
Let's talk about how he got to be head of state.
Let me ask one question first.
Okay.
Is there a more irresponsible public stance by a head of state than to forbid the use of contraception? That is so radically irresponsible, so far out of touch with the times in which we live. That's a ruinous piece of doctrine that is still in force. Unless you think for a moment that it doesn't touch upon you here in the United States, the American Congress of Catholic Bishops just rejected the latest accommodation from the Obama administration on his mandate that contraception be covered by every health insurance plan with no copayment. They are still fighting this.
Yeah, and that's really the politically important part of this, I think. The choice of religion should be free and irrelevant of, I think, temporal politics. But unfortunately, in the United States particularly, but in the world in general, one's religious faith, whatever it is, whether it's Islam or Judaism or Christianity or Buddhism, whatever, really impacts the politics, the real world politics of society. So it's really a very relevant issue. When my mommy... long-departed, mm-hmm. nice woman, was involved in creating a cooperative nursery school in Brooklyn. This was back during World War II, so that women, who often were working in the defense industry, would have a safe place to bring their kids while working. They were blocked. Bishop Sheen in New York did not allow. He had a letter, I don't know what they call it, a letter that is read to the congregation saying the Catholics should not send their kids to this nursery school because it wasn't Catholic.
Hmm.
So, you know, this created an enormous problem for women who needed some kind of safe childcare, although maybe not so safe. I don't know. Anyway, I mean, it's just another example of sort of thing. When I was a child in the seventh grade, I was walking on the street near our house in San Diego. It was a Catholic school, which went K through 8. And two nuns, in those days, nuns wore penguin suits, really mm-hmm. nice, I thought, very Middle Ages outfits. And they were walking, all older ladies, and I had a dog, and they looked at the dog, and they said, oh, what a sweet dog. Too bad it has no soul, it can never go to heaven. I didn't know that.
Oh, it's terrible.
Is that true? Is that a doctrine of the Catholic faith that only humans have a soul?
The dogs can't go to heaven? I'm pretty sure, yes, that only human beings being created.
Absolutely.
In God's image,
I'm hearing from all the ex-Catholics in the space I'm in saying, absolutely.
All right.
Now, dogs have no soul.
I want to open the phones here in just a minute because you and I have prattled on long enough.
Yes, but way too long.
I want to pose this question to you, callers. Is a patriarchal establishment like the Catholic Church a relevant thing here in the 21st century? And let's not forget...
Well, wait, it's relevant. Is it a good thing?
Is it a good thing? All right. Is it a good thing in the 21st century? And let's not forget that there's the very definition of patriarchy is embodied by the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. Nothing but men. Nothing but men in dresses. No women in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church.
They don't always wear dresses.
No women. And they're trying to tell you whether you can use contraception. And a little more broadly, does patriarchal religion, is that a positive force in the world in the 21st century? I would say no, it's not. But I'd like to hear what you think. 503-231-8187. Sharon, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Well, I think that I speak for myself. I was a former Catholic youth pastor for 4 years after converting to the Catholic Church. During my conversion, no one ever mentioned that the rampant pedophilia in the church. And when I found out that that was going on, I walked away from the church, and I have never gone back and never will go back. And then I made a concerted study of this issue in the Catholic Church. Now, we can talk about churches and things that go on, and we can try to exempt, but I'm just speaking to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that this abuse has been going on since Constantine, from the very beginning of the formation of the Catholic Church. And I would refer you to castrato, C-A-S-T-R-A-T-O, and that is the practice of castrating young boys. It's in the Catholic Church.
So their voices wouldn't change.
So, right. Maybe you can explain it better than I can. But so their voices would not change. They castrated them in pubescence so that their voices would not change, so that they would have those high-pitched voices to sing the Mass. Now, I don't hear that mentioned. What I hear is that this is a modern problem. I believe that the only response to what is going on with this rampant pedophilia and the cover-up is for Catholics to simply walk out of the church. I mean, I cannot understand, number one, how it is that the nuns, the priests, everyone in that church knows exactly what's going on, and still they carry on this really evil charade. And the people who sit in the pews are the victims. Their children are the victims of these people. And I do not understand why the Catholic priest is exempt from going to jail, where he belongs, where a soccer coach or a teacher who does the same thing gets his just dessert.
You're right.
Now, I would, just one last thing. I would suggest you read a book, Lead Us Not Into Temptation, Catholic Priest and the Sexual Abuse of Children by Jason Berry. Jason Berry is a Catholic man who is also a journalist, and from the foreword of Andrew M. Greeley, who is one of the few good Catholic priests, Andrew Greeley writes, "The greatest scandal in the history of religion in America." Now, until the Catholics themselves deal with this, they have no credibility on any issue, on abortion, on any issue whatsoever, because this is the worst possible scandal. I totally agree with the worst possible thing that you can do to a kid. The worst.
Oh, I agree.
All right, have a good one.
Hey, thank you so much for the call. That's some very strong feelings there.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yes.
Yes.
I think maybe we'll get somebody who'll call and talk about good Catholic things. I do want to talk about liberation theology a little bit. I mean, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it, but within the church itself, there are many political, social, ethical threads. And it is important to realize that it has, over its history, refreshed itself as an institution, tried to become more pure to the faith. It has, in fact, engaged in the social betterment of individuals in various contexts.
Advocate ordaining women?
No.
Ah, I see.
No women.
I'm going to throw this out in the conversation. I think the Catholic hierarchy of the church is the very definition of a misogynist organization, down to its very core, because it still maintains to this day that women lack the fundamental ability to serve as priests.
Well, do they? I mean, aren't they silent and just don't let them? I mean, they actually say women are not up to the task?
Well, not in so many words, but it's littered throughout the mythology. I mean, Adam created first, then Eve created from his rib, and commanded by God to be subservient to him.
So maybe your criticism is of Christianity?
It is.
Oh, okay.
It is, and that's why I wanted to broaden the conversation.
Shouldn't your
today.
Criticism also be of Islam and Judaism?
Yes,
of all the Western religions?
I indeed have criticisms of all Abrahamic
checking,
faiths.
Just checking
yes.
it out.
Ironic that I, Abe, have criticism.
Yeah, you,
Abraham,
Abe. Abe. Okay.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I think one of the problems with organized religion is that it tends to suppress a person's ability to be a critical thinker.
I would agree with that statement.
But one other thing is that I think a lot of people that truly believe that they are Catholics, or more broadly, that they are Christians, have sort of lost the understanding of what Christ's message really is. And I think in order to demonstrate, I mean, the ability to demonstrate hypocrisy can be a very powerful political tool. And I think that as Americans, we should be able to ask politicians who, you know, use their going to church on Sunday, and that a lot of their constituents also feel that they're very religious, that we could use that as a way to say, the earlier program, Amy Goodman's show, was talking about the Ryan budget. And it seems like we should be able to say, how does Ryan's budget speak to the Christian message of, taking care of the poor and what you do for the least of my people? Well, anyway, I'd like to know your comments on that.
That's a very good point. I don't know where Christianity, I don't know how one... deals with the dissonance of a hierarchical and very wealthy church that doesn't take all of its vast wealth and distribute it to the poor. There was a book, I think, a fictional book called The Shoes of the Fisherman, which also became a movie, in which a new pope decides to give away the Catholic faith's vast fortunes. I visited the Vatican. By the way, the Vatican City was created as a kind of a deal with Mussolini's fascists. That was when it became a small nation state within Rome. And it basically made a deal that that essentially took it out of the sphere, officially, out of the sphere of other things. Well, Holy Ghost
Ghost in the
thing.
Machine, yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
All right, I should say at this point, this is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm Abe, that's Joe. As you might infer, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. We're taking your calls, 503-231-8187.
I want to add one more thing, which I tried to allude to. It seems to me that hierarchically organized, established institutional religions, whatever their credo, are inevitably, through time, going to become like any other bureaucratic established institutional structure, with struggles for power, power available, and it is immense. Mm-hmm. I mean, and historically, the church, the Catholic Church, was a major player in European politics.
Indeed.
And that
kingmakers.
Kingmakers. And that can never be ignored. There was the Holy Roman Empire, which was the temporal structure, but it had to be validated by the Pope out of Rome.
At one point, Pope Innocent III, he was the Holy Father in Rome. At that point, his adopted son was Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, and Spain, France, and England, and virtually all the other European states were Catholic vassal states. He was, in effect, the temporal and spiritual ruler of Europe, and very few people in history can make that claim.
Have you ever visited the Vatican?
I have not.
They got a lot of nice stuff, man.
I
mean, no, they do. They got a lot of nice jewels. They got a lot of nice paintings. They got a lot of nice sculpture. At some point in history, by the way, and I don't know whether it was the Catholic Church or who, went around to all the male statues from Rome, you know, from ancient Rome, and whacked their dingus off.
Oh, and that's a whole other can of worms, so to speak. The sex negativity inherent not only in Catholicism, but in all Christian sects.
Sects.
Yes. It is there. It is misogyny at its core. It is why most Christians oppose abortion. It is why the Catholic Church opposes contraception. It is why...
Well, no, wait a minute. I don't think
sex let me finish. That's why there's sex negativity based into so many different Protestant denominations. They are against unauthorized sexy time, and they will try and control your body, control your actions, and control your minds, especially you women, to keep you from being fully realized sexual human beings.
Well, no, I mean, wait just a minute here.
It's true.
Just a minute. If you believe that every sperm is sacred, that every sperm is a little homo nucleus, a little tiny man, rushing toward an egg to make a human being, then every time you block that process, you are committing murder.
Well, in that case, I'm guilty of genocide.
I don't want to get
Joe,
into your genocide.
Since the time I was 13 years old.
13, eh?
All right.
Okay.
503-231-818 has so whole galaxies wiped out in gym socks. 503-231-8187. Each time a massive sin. We'll take in your calls right now. Who's next? Jeremy, good morning.
Boy, 35 minutes, and I'm the third caller.
Yeah, we talk
really,
a lot.
Okay, you're going to berate us? You got something to say?
To be honest, I'm less bored than I could have been since although I've agreed with everything you've said. The things I'd like to raise about, well, I'm not allowed to say what I call, I would call Ratzinger, R-A-T-F blank blank K-E-R.
So you don't like him?
Well, I guess he was something of a Nazi, wasn't he?
I don't know that.
Well, I believe there were pictures of him doing bad things in that era. I think that they were suggestive, if not probative, but certainly his behavior as one of the most powerfully evil people in the world has not suggested any great steps forward in care for his fellow human beings. I want to reinforce what Abe said earlier about his having been appointed, I think, to continue the cover-up of the mass rape of, I think, I'm guessing it's hundreds of thousands of kids all over the world. And the thing I'd like to suggest about the church and sex abuse, and I speak as someone who went to a prominent high school that's going to be featured in about 2 weeks in the New Yorker, of which there was a cult of sex abuse also. Mm. And I should mention this is a male institution, but after it co-educated, there continued to be really bad teachers who then proceeded to rape girls too.
Mm.
But anyway, during my era, it was all boys. And I'd like to suggest something of a cult. That then when you have an institution like this going on for centuries with these horrific practices and a conspiracy to cover them up, And I don't know if people are recruited into the cult or I know from my own experience as a sex abuse victim, people often have impulses to sort of pass along the horrible behavior, and those of us who are broken really badly then become perpetrators.
Well, there is evidence. There is evidence, clinical evidence. You're right.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah, and anyway, but to be honest, I narrowly escaped the shit at high school. It's something that happened to me earlier. But anyway, I'd really like to reinforce two things. I think he was something of a Nazi, and I think the Catholic Church is a cult of sex abuse. And I'm not terribly interested in the unfortunate fact that many good people who have this, I think, silly belief system do good work anyway. But the leadership and the organization of the church is functionally deeply evil. And Rat F-U blank blank E-R's behavior in the papacy, and by the way, I think the reason he resigned is he was probably going to get in a lot of trouble. Anyway, I'll take your response.
Okay.
Hey, thanks very much for the call.
He doesn't like the church. He had a bad experience.
No, he doesn't like the church. And he brought up an interesting point. Essentially, he asked, do the good works of the billions and millions of Catholics around the world who do good work in their communities every day.
Among whom are priests and nuns.
Among whom are priests and nuns. Does that cancel out or some way abrogate the bad acts of the hierarchy? And I would say no. And I would say to those Catholics who are out there doing good things, you can do good things, but you don't have to be connected with this this hierarchy, this organization of old men in dresses, which I think is rotten to the core and has been for centuries.
Well, I think perhaps historically important is what I brought up earlier, that there is nothing in the Old Testament, nothing in the New Testament that creates the hierarchy of the church. And there is that, all of that is a set of politically created institutions which maintained the doctrine and maintained real temporal power to a great extent. So when we talk about Catholicism, we're talking about a religion. We're talking about a population, a billion or more people. We're also talking about this institution, which has still, even though it's lost a lot of it's having a hard time finding nuns and priests, it's still extremely wealthy.
Indeed. And our last caller compared the church to a cult. I believe Frank Zappa said the difference between a cult and the religion is a question of real estate.
I think that's
yes. And
I
the Catholic Church is the largest landowner in the world.
Well, in fact, the Catholic Church is very influential. In New York City, for example, I remember this very well. The church had the right to shut down the street in front of the Catholic school, except for the parents, for the cars of the children being delivered by their parents in front of the church. And in fact, often the side street between a Catholic church and a church-owned property that was the schoolyard was closed during school hours or even permanently. So there was power in the church, and there was an enormous struggle. And this is important, an anti-popish struggle characterized the American Revolution and all political activities in the United States. One of the significant reasons why we have separation of church and state comes out of the struggles of the Civil War and other fights in England around Catholicism. And in fact, we had, beginning with the influx of large numbers of German Catholics and then more significantly Irish Catholics, who are more fundamentalist in their approaches, a enormous hate campaign against
Indeed.
The Catholic Church. So we need to understand that as part of all of this.
President Kennedy, campaigning for office, or when he's running for president, had to come out and say, I don't answer to the Pope.
Right, and that was in Texas, where there was a lot in those days of anti-Catholic sentiment, in part because of the ethnicity issues around Texas. Remember, Texas is a state that really was originally part of Mexico and that has still a large Hispanic population.
And Kennedy was shot in Texas anyway.
Well, yeah.
How ironic. All right, I got to read this piece of paper right here.
Okay.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, author, playwright, poet, and activist Amari Baraka speaks on real politics, real poetry. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, legal scholar and founder of the Center for Constitutional Rights, Michael Ratner. Labels Obama's,
another rat.
Uh-huh. Labels Obama's drone assassination program a crime against humanity. And as the Pope steps down, Flashpoints remembers the pontiff's role in the global cover-up of child molestation by Catholic priests and bishops around the world. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts talks with Rita Parrish and Wendy Westerwell about Triangle Productions' 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. She also interviews Whitebird's Walter Jaffe about the New Zealand dance troupe Black Grace. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Michelle Ross, who is showing at the Museum of Contemporary Craft as part of the new group show, We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live. All that and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yes.
Religions at the end of the day are systems of control. And if one feels a need to commune spiritually with the universe, with the earth, with one's fellow human beings, I submit that you can do it absent an organized faith.
Well, that's okay for you to say, but you can't say that people shouldn't have an organized faith.
No, but I'm saying you don't necessarily need one. Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
Who do we have? Who? I'm sorry? Charlene. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you just stole my fire a little bit by talking about President Kennedy. I was going to mention how he really did have to go to great lengths to say that his religion was not going to be a point in his presidency, which is very different from these decades later where people are making a big issue that their religion is going to be a point in their presidency.
Well, that is an important point. And one of the most interesting things about the last electoral cycle, national electoral cycle, was the degree to which there was an infusion of two elements of political Christianity. First, the religious fundamentalist Protestant politics, and then secondarily, the most conservative elements of the Catholic faith. In the struggle for who will be the Republican candidate. And ironically, the only guy that survived that struggle was a Mormon, which I think is kind of entertaining.
That is kind of entertaining. Yeah.
The other point that I wanted to make was I have been to the Vatican.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago. But anyway, it made an impression on me as a young girl. I saw the pictures of heaven, and then they had quite a lot of pictures of hell, just right there for everybody to see, with the human form in the most terrible positions and situations for all eternity. And kind of made me glad I was not a Catholic.
Really? Like, so it kind of scared you as a young woman?
I won't have an opportunity to, do...
Well, supposing you're wrong, you're going to have to spend a lot of time making up, all of time.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to say, if you do go to the Vatican, there are... I think those pictures are still there, and I think the images are still... maybe not flown around the world to everybody, but are certainly in the sermons that are given as far as how to keep the population down because of this promise of future eternity that would not be pleasant if you were in any way, shape, or form not a good person.
Okay, well, thank you for that. For that, and I would just point out one other thing within Christianity, which is very different from Judaism, but similar to Islam. It is the duty. It really is the duty of Christians in many Christian faiths to convert everybody to their faith. Usually, not only to the Christian faith in the large sense, but to their specific church.
Especially evangelists, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's there, and there is a lot of evangelical effort within the Catholic Church itself.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's pretty entertaining. But anyway, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right, who's next? Robin, good morning.
Good morning. I think one of the problems with the Catholic religion is so many never read the Bible, and you know they just get it from someone else. For instance, the Bible says that the marriage bed is undefiled. So there's nothing about forcing anyone with contraception.
It's a personal and private matter.
Yes. And I mean, it's that's like complete freedom, saying the marriage bed is undefiled. And also, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And just because someone, you know, puts on a robe doesn't make them a Christian, you know?
Well, and if I put on a robe, I think I'd be a Christian.
And I think, like, the problem was, like, with when the church joined, you know, worldly powers, it totally probably corrupted, you know? But it doesn't corrupt the gospel or the Bible. And how Jesus warned, if you offend a child, it would be better to have a millstone around your neck and be thrown into the water. So I don't know where those people will go when they've offended children. If they say they know Christ and they've done far more than offend a child, I don't know.
Well, I think they ought to go to jail.
Yeah.
But the church kept them from
going
to jail.
Exactly. And as for Jesus and the patriarchy thing, it wasn't he known as like the first historical person to treat women equally? Like when the story when Mary and Martha, you know, one sister wanted to, you know, be in the kitchen serving, and he said to the other sister, she's chosen the better part. He saw women as complete equals, and that's another point, actually, that the Gospels must be so true, because to make a woman the first one that would see Christ resurrected, you know, the first one he spoke to. So in history, he treated women, you know, completely equal. There's neither Greek nor Jew, male nor female in Christ. So,
well, that's pretty well said.
Well,
it makes me wonder how his followers have gotten it so wrong for so long.
Right, because when you put on a robe, like he said, you know, the Pharisees love to be seen praying in public and in their robes, and it has nothing to do with him. And he said, when you pray, go in a quiet place. You know, God hears you. Just be sincere.
Don't wear it on your sleeve.
Right, and don't repeat repetitive prayers, he warned about. He said, you know, people think if they repeat the same things over and over, they'll be heard. And he said, no, you know, go in a quiet place, and it's in truth. You know, it's not in format. Hmm. It's the sincere heart.
Well, listen, thank you very much for that call. It's nice to hear some sincere beliefs expressed like that. And I think we're going to give some others a chance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Who's next? Corey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Boy, what a contrast. I'm going to engage in some Catholicism bashing. I grew up Catholic, and my whole dad's side of the family is complete Catholic, so I have an intimate view. First off, I want to bring up a Tom Robbins quote. I'm reading another roadside attraction, mm-hmm. and he can't help himself, and he is talking about Catholicism and, I suppose, Christianity, and how it's a religion based on a logical fallacy, that is the virgin birth. And so I think that relates to what you guys were talking about, that it's kind of asexual, kind of not logical and devoid of true humanity.
Well, I'd say more anti-sexual.
Right.
Yes. Specifically anti-female sexuality.
Totally.
But go ahead.
The other thing was an anecdote from my grandma. She sent five of her kids through Catholic school and prayed the rosary three times a day. Boy, a few years ago, she was getting real angsty and real frustrated. And I said, hey, Grandma, you know, what's the chip on your shoulder? And she says, boy, the world is just full of problems. And, you know, I'm an activist at heart, and so I got really excited. You know, I said, what is it? You know, the war, you know, economic problems in our country. And she says, well, number one, pornography.
Hmm.
Number two, birth control.
Yeah.
And all her news sources are Catholic-based news sources. And so that's what's being perpetuated in the community.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks,
hey,
guys.
Thanks very much for the call.
You know what's interesting? We're getting a lot of calls from women mm-hmm. on this. Two shows ago, I had a discussion about melanoma, about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of women callers. I tend to see a kind of, and I think it's a little bit unfortunate, a division between when we talk about a major political issue outside of issues of faith or personal lifestyle, personal survival, we tend to get more male callers. I don't know what that is. It's just something I wanted to note.
That's the nature of talk radio.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay.
All right, who's next? Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I actually grew up in a Protestant family, so I'm not going to comment too much on the Catholic thing, although I've known enough Catholics to recognize what you're talking about. I will mention quickly that, of course, Protestant religions have their own share of problems, and I think it does come back to patriarchal hierarchy. But I just wanted to really quickly mention, you asked before, you kind of posed this question, why do people keep returning to these structures? And as I've moved away from organized religion, not really finding a rhetoric I can get behind so mm-hmm. far mm-hmm. in my life, I have found a huge gap in my life regarding just communal organizing. I know a lot of people find it in activism or other secular activities, but, you know, the church does fill a need. And I just want to make that quick comment.
No, I think that's really important to realize.
Feedback on that, yeah.
I think the phenomenon of congregations, whatever the faith base for those congregations, is pretty much, I would suspect, universal to humankind.
I would agree.
And we like to gather to share our beliefs, whatever they may be, however temporal or otherwise.
Yeah, we form congregations whether we're religious or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for the show.
You bet. Let's get a few more in here before the end. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I know you're running out of time, but I wanted to try to answer your question from way back, Abe, where you said, does a patriarchal establishment or a patriarchal religion serve any purpose? And I would say emphatically no, but I also want to offer these comments. I was raised Catholic, grade school, high school, and college. I considered being a nun when I was 19, my freshman year of college, and I was actually talked out of it by a nun and a priest on our campus who said, get out and do something outside the Catholic Church. I'm no longer a practicing Catholic because there's too many things that I object to, but I'd like to be. But I don't think that things in the church will change in my lifetime. However, were there a progressive parish in my community, I would be a member because I have a couple of friends all the way back from kindergarten who are members of progressive Catholic parishes, one in Columbus, Ohio, and the other one in Washington, D.C., and they look nothing like the hierarchy of the church. It's almost as if these parishes are doing their own thing, and this seems to be a phenomenon within the United States. There's also large groups of ex-priests who meet and talk about their kind of longing for the church to be different, and they give each other a lot of support, and they do a lot of community action, etc. So while I will never, I'm 72, and I don't think in my lifetime things are going to turn around, there's a longing for me to have a different kind of church. And, so I kind of keep that as a hope. I want to finish with this comment. Some of the most remarkable, brightest, and most forward-thinking people I've ever known were nuns. Really amazingly courageous women who were intellectuals and who were way ahead of their time, and really imbued in me the Catholic Church's commitment to social justice, which I think is one of the great things that I got from the church. I just want to say one other quick thing. Joe, I don't think your references to the baby Jesus are particularly helpful, although I know you're...
That was me referring to the baby Jesus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
Oh, I apologize.
Oh, it's okay.
And then also you're starting off with liturgical music. You know, I grew up singing as a kid in church with liturgical music, and I absolutely loved it. And so that was really lovely because it took me back. So depending on a person's experience, it can be a positive or negative thing. But I just wanted to offer those thoughts to you. And thank you for this great show.
Well, thank you for the call. It sounds like you're saying, despite all the baggage that we've been talking about with the Catholic Church, that it resonates with you on some very deep level. And there were some very profound feelings of kinship with the rest of humanity that you brought out of your experience with the church. So
yeah,
it sounds as if I can extrapolate from your comments that there's room for redemption in the church. And maybe that path lies in a schism. Maybe the American Catholic Church breaks away from Rome.
Yes. I mean, I'm really seeing that among a lot of people who I've known for years and years who really are devout Catholics but don't listen to anything that Rome says and don't subscribe to any of its theology. It's almost like they're doing their own thing, and there are thousands of these people all over the United States meeting in groups.
And maybe that's the question that these sort of people should ask themselves. Are we in fact still Catholics, or are we something different?
Yeah,
thank you very much for the call.
You're very much. Okay, and I apologize for accusing you, Joe. That wasn't fair.
That's okay. I can handle it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Well, I think we're pretty close to the end.
Do you feel like you've done your duty as a lapsed Catholic?
I was never a Catholic to begin with.
Well, you went to Catholic school.
Yeah, but I was never confirmed.
You went to
any of that stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Were you baptized?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
That was a little baby thing.
I don't remember, but I've been assured that I wasn't.
Oh, okay. Hey, thanks all of you. Stay tuned to KBOO, the station that takes on fearlessly.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Thanks for your calls, your comments. We'll be back at you next week.
From those nads in Tiananmen Square, it's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly.
It's a new year, and Black History Month is now upon us to reflect the issues unique to Black African peoples. Join me, Sequoyna Wright, a KBOO volunteer regular, every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for the month of February, starting February 2nd, as I discuss with special guests Tariq Nasheed, Dr. Umar Johnson, Dr. Claude Anderson, and my very own father about the present state of Black America. Topics include love and relationships, mental health, music, and economics. Tune in and join in on the conversation on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, author, playwright, poet, and activist, Amiri Baraka speaks on real politics, real poetry. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, legal scholar and founder of the Center for Constitutional Rights, Michael Ratner, labels Obama's drone assassination program a crime against humanity. And as the Pope steps down, Flashpoints remembers the pontiff's role in the global cover-up of child molestation by Catholic priests and bishops around the world. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D-May Roberts talks with Rita Parrish and Wendy Westerwell about Triangle Productions' 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. She also interviews Whitebird's Walter Jaffe about the New Zealand dance troupe Black Grace. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Michelle Ross, who is showing at the Museum of Contemporary Craft as a part of the group show, We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live. And thank you, KBOO members, for your support for listener-sponsored community radio. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
I don't understand why you write if you're not trying to effect some change in the real world, unless you think everything is cool, in which case, you know, we're on the other side of that. Like I said, you got to choose sides. That's what it is. You always got to choose sides. So what is the revolutionary? Revolutionary is always trying to do the most, trying to speak directly to the situation, you know, and to get people to understand that. So it's a hard gig because you find yourself always on the other side of what public wisdom seems to be.
That's Amiri Baraka, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Amiri Baraka, Real Politics, Real Poetry. The role of creative people has long been debated. Should they focus on their art and stay away from politics? Poets, writers, painters, musicians, filmmakers, artists in general, occupy a unique cultural position in society. Their impact and influence extend far and wide. They illuminate realities in imaginative ways that expand awareness and understanding. Think of Dylan's Masters of War, or Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, or Picasso's Guernica, or Langston Hughes's poem, Columbia, where he exposes the depredations of U.S. imperialism. He writes,